there, and welcome to episode 22, season 2 of Rainbow Bridge Connection. I'm Kayla, and as I promised you last episode when I said I was going to do an episode that was kind of like a quote-unquote filler episode, I was going to have a really great guest, dare I say amazing guest, on the show for this episode, and we do have her. Her name is Lisa Rimmert. I said that right?
You did, yeah.
Okay. Ooh, okay. Every time I was telling her, every time I get so nervous because even someone's last name can be Smith and that fear comes in where I'm like, Smith? Like, I can't pronounce it right, even though I've said Smythe. It like, right, totally. So Lisa is an author of a book. I highly suggest her book is called Stay. Actually, do you want me to do, because it's Stay and then it's My Forever Friendship with an Aging Dog, correct?
Yep.
Like the whole thing. Okay. And I have the book. She was so nice and sent me a copy of her book and I can't put it down. And I've only had it for about a week and I can't put it down. It really hits close to home for me because of what it encompasses of the part of the aging dog. We just recently lost Kiki, who was going through different aging experiences, and I had never experienced my own personal companion animals aging. I unfortunately lost Athena when she was 7 months old, so aging is a whole new like ballpark for me. But Lisa's a writer and she's a comedian, so you're in for a treat because we're both very funny people. Just kidding.
That's,
you know,
right.
I'm not funny.
I think you're funny and you're very real, which just, you know, that makes it fun and engaging to listen to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Sometimes I think people are like, girl, you're a little too real. We take it back a few notches.
No, so, I love it. I love it.
All right, Lisa. So tell me, let's start off, like, what made you decide I want to write a book?
Oh, good question. I always say, it depends on what stage of the process you would have asked me that question, because it kind of evolved along with the project. But I started actually just writing about my dog Dakota's life, and after she passed away, I was nervous that I would forget things, which I think is a relatable feeling when you lose someone. You're like, oh no, what if I forget what they sound like and smell like and all the memories we had. So I started just kind of making these silly little lists of, you know, Dakota's dog friends and things Dakota used as pillows. And it was, you know, piles of shoes and hoodies I threw on the floor and things like that. And then I started writing more seriously about her. And somewhere along the way in the beginning there, I thought, you know what? She really deserves her own book. Like, she deserves some kind of concrete way to live on in the world. So I was kind of like grasping at anything I could do to keep her alive in some way. Mm-hmm. And I thought a book would be a really perfect way to do that. And it would be a fun challenge for myself because I've been a writer for a long time, but I've never written anything quite so intense.
Right. Or personal like that. I mean,
yeah,
grief is like, I feel, one of the most personal things to share with people. Because it's not really talked about, you know what I mean? It's like people are like, oh, they passed away. And then you don't really hear or see that person because they're going through their own grief journey and you don't really see what's happening or what's going on in their head. And you just assume, well, everything's fine. And then when you go through it yourself, you're like, not everything's fine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird thing that everyone goes through no matter what. And we kind of keep to ourselves about it, I think, a lot. Because, you know, it's not fun to be sad and it's not fun to be around someone who's sad. And so there's a lot of like societal factors telling us to kind of keep it to ourselves. But it's such a relatable thing. And that became part of the reason that I wrote the book was I did want other people to hear a story that they could relate to and feel less alone and feel more inspired maybe to be present with their loved ones that are still here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny you brought that up because that's how I've been recently. So we lost Kiki, everybody on the show knows, we lost Kiki in September, and I did a whole episode where it's like, I feel like I wasted the 8 years we had her mourning her, because she had a lot of like health problems and stuff. So every little thing I would be like, oh, this is it. This is the end. You know, like, we're not going to have her. What are we going to do? And then, you know, she'd be fine. And then she'd be fine. And then when she wasn't fine, then it was like, oh God, I wasted 8 years of not being present and being so concerned about the end. And so I think that's fantastic. I think that that is one of the biggest lessons people, I've heard other people and me myself have tried to learn, is like, oh yeah, you got to be present. Because if you're not present, then you miss out on the good stuff.
Right. Yeah. And I think we all have that to a degree. I certainly, you know, when Dakota started getting older, I started thinking, uh-oh, you know, she's not going to be around forever, like I had hoped, and maybe was in a little bit of denial about for her most of her life. And it's that's one of the hardest things, anticipatory grief. And especially because I know you said you lost your previous dog very young. And so you had that like trauma that was informing, you know, how you reacted to things down the road. I remember, spoiler alert, I live with a new dog now, and she was a puppy when we adopted her, but every time she would fall or she would need to go to the vet or anything, I was just so on edge, like, oh no, like, nothing bad can happen to her. I can't deal with it again. And so, you're just kind of taking those past experiences and they're bleeding in and everybody's messing everything up and we're all just doing our best.
Totally. 100%. And you're 100% correct on that, because it was like the only experience that I had with my own, having my own companion animal, was Athena. And then she passed away at 8 months. So for the first, we got the two boys right after her, 8 months after her, for the first, I would say 8 months, I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Like everything was so scary. Like they had worms, you know how that's normal when they're in a rescue and they're around other dogs and they had worms, and I'm like, oh, they're dying.
It's so scary. Upset.
It is. It's so scary. So I can definitely relate, and I know a lot of our listeners can relate to that, because it goes from 0 to 100 really fast. And then, like you said, you're sitting there thinking, I can't do this again. I cannot go through this again right now. I have to have time. I can't. I'm not going to be able to process going through this all over again.
Yeah. I remember, so when my dog now, Phoenix, which by the way, I never know what to call her. I never want to be like the new dog, you know, like I she's know, not totally. A replacement in any way.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a weird thing to describe her. But when we first adopted her, she had the same thing. She was a rescue. So she lived on the streets of the Houston area for the first 5 months or so of her life. And so she had all the worms and everything you can possibly imagine. And I was on the phone with the vet at one time, and she said, well, we might prescribe gabapentin. And that was a thing that I had given Dakota for a long time. And I maybe thought I was better in terms of grieving Dakota, but I just found myself like bawling, just totally in tears based on that word gabapentin, and just being like, no, we can't give her to I can't do this again. But it was, you know, it was for an entirely different, like very innocuous thing that Phoenix had that was like no problem, but just the word itself kind of like triggered me back into the grief.
Well, and almost like when you're done giving the medications and you've come to the, I'm in the stage where I'm coming to like the acceptance, not necessarily acceptance of her passing away, but more of the acceptance of like, all right, you're not going to have to get her medication anymore. All right. You're not going to get her special food anymore. All right. You're not going to have to, you know, that kind of thing. We did gabapentin too, because she had really bad hips, and she also had 4 knee surgeries. And so she was on gabapentin and tramadol. And when I realized like, okay, we're not going to have to do this anymore. All of my dog, all the other 3 ones, they don't need medication. Just chill. And then a week ago, my dog has really bad anxiety, and they're like, we're going to try Prozac and possibly gabapentin. And I did the same thing. I was like, no, we're not doing gabapentin. We're not doing this again.
Yeah, we already did that.
Yeah.
We can't handle it again.
Can't do this again. I had put it in my head that this is that, you know, the one little tiny glimmer of hope is that I wasn't going to have to deal with medications anymore. And then now we're going to have to deal with medications. And I know that's tiny. That's a little tiny thing. Like, to keep him healthy, I'll do whatever. But I was like, nope, no gabapentin. Why are we doing this again? Why are we going down that road again? I don't like this.
Don't remind me of my sadness.
Right,
How dare you?
Totally, totally. All right, so let's talk about your book itself. Tell me about your book. Tell me about Dakota and just give me like a synopsis because we're going to make you guys buy it because you guys need to read this book. So she's going to give us a little crumb and then you guys need to go buy it.
Yeah, so it's a memoir, so it's a true story. And I joke that I say memoir. Some people say memoir, and I'm like, okay, we can't be friends. It's a very down-to-earth book because I like to think I am. And it's about basically my attempts at, well, it's about my story of taking care of and then, spoiler alert, losing a senior dog who was my soul dog, right? My whole everything, my identity. But it's also a story about me being in denial about every step of the process of her getting older, her body kind of breaking down. You know, then I was into, once I accepted that she was getting older or maybe that she was old, I started denying that I would ever have to say goodbye to her. So it's just me fighting every step of the process. And that's a big theme throughout the book. And then my husband, who's a part of the story as well, obviously, is kind of like, he serves as the reality checks along the way, like trying to push me to be present and do the things I need to do and admit that she's old and all that. So I think it's a pretty relatable story. And it's a heartwarming, it's a tender story, but it's also filled with humor in the parts that are that warrant humor. And so I think people are often afraid of reading it, but it's really a nice book that a lot of people have said, oh my gosh, this really helped me to, you know, understand and deal with what I was going through at the time. So it's really nice to get those forms of feedback about it. And it was a really, you know, I was writing it kind of as I was not in my worst grieving moments, but you know, the couple of years after Dakota passed away is when I was writing it. And so it was a cathartic thing for me as well.
Right. Yeah. I was just going to ask that. Like, was writing it kind of helpful to process the grief and process, you know, the loss? And really, like, when you had said you wrote things down about her, that, like, that's what kind of started, was just writing things because you didn't want to forget. That's huge. I feel like that's such a huge piece of advice that we, you know, that you could give to somebody that is either has anticipatory grief or has just had the loss, or even maybe years later, to write down everything that you remember about them. Because I don't know if this is how everybody is, but personally, me, my way of dealing with things is to not think about it. And then here we are 11 years later, and there's things I don't remember, and it kills me that I don't remember. Like, I don't remember her face. Like, I remember her face, but I don't. You know what I mean? Like, it's like I remember her face in terms of pictures. I remember her face, but I cannot. There's only one time in my head that I can pinpoint a memory of her doing something. And it's a memory, and it's not like a, oh, well, I have a picture that I've seen a bunch of times, or I have this, you know, type of thing. And, you know, my husband and my sister will tell stories about her, and I'll be like, what? I don't remember that, you know, because I don't remember a lot of things about her because I took all that grief I was having and shut out the entire situation, which included her. And I think that causes way more issues. I mean, like I said, 11 years later, and I'm still a wreck about it. And I'm trying to be better about the current loss. But with you saying that, that was like one of the most poignant, like, light bulb moments for me, where I was like, oh my God, like, what a good way of healthily dealing with the loss and healthily really trying to make an effort to not have the problems later where you're like, I don't remember this, or I don't remember that, or whatever. And then for you to bring up, you know, you wanted to write the book so people knew about Dakota is fantastic.
It's fantastic. I've found I mean, there are things that I can't remember. Like, so there was I won't give away the story, but there was a towel involved in those final days, and the towel had Dakota's scent on it, and we kept that towel like right where it was in our, I think it was in our dining room. It stayed there for a really long time, and we didn't wash it until I think when we moved from we moved out of state, I don't even know, a year later or something, mm-hmm. but we just didn't wash that towel because we were like, this has her scent and I don't want to forget it. And now, I mean, I clearly don't have the towel anymore. We're two houses away from where we were before, but, and I still get sad thinking, I can't like picture her smell. That's not even the right word
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
But you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what she smelled like. I can't make myself smell it now. And that's so sad, but yeah, I did want to remember and record, I guess, as many things as I could about her, just for fear that, mm-hmm. that those things would go away. And I found that, at least for me, the things that have helped the most and been the most meaningful in terms of dealing with the grief or processing the grief have been finding ways, and maybe this is me being in denial further, but finding ways to keep her alive in some way. So, mm-hmm. So writing the book, like, I mean, every time, it sounds so cheesy, but every time I see someone with the book or somebody tells me that they ordered it or they read it or whatever, I just think, oh my God, like Dakota is now part of their life, you know? And so she's just, it's this tree branch that's just going out and like, she's becoming this little piece of everyone's life, whether it's, you know, something in the book that resonated with them or whatnot, but it's so meaningful. And I like to give my brother a shout out too, because he, when we lost Dakota, he gave us a present, which was, he purchased, you can sponsor a plaque at some animal shelters where they'll put the plaque on one of the dog kennels. And so there's a plaque at this shelter in North Carolina that says Dakota. And I think it says the best good girl, cause it's kind of what we would call her. And I'm just like, oh, just the feeling of like Dakota's name being on an animal shelter, like helping other dogs, but also just like people walking by it and being like, oh, that's sweet, Dakota. So now every time I go to like a park or anything where they have benches that are dedicated to folks who've passed away, I always try to read them. And just like, you know, like, oh, they had the same feeling that I did while they're trying to keep someone alive in whatever way they can, you know, in our minds. That's right. Really sweet.
Yeah. Oh God, she made me tear up, man. I thought let's get through one episode where I'm not ball baby. At least when Nikki was here, we shared in it together, where me and her would just be bawling our eyes out, and you know. But now I'm by myself, have to cry by myself.
Oh,
but
no.
But yeah, no, that's, I agree with you. That is, I actually, it's very weird. You just talked about that, because the last episode we did was about anticipatory grief, but I started out the episode saying that it gives me comfort to know that Athena and Kiki, people know their stories. I did a whole episode on Athena and a whole episode on Kiki, and I felt like I wanted to share in that, and I wanted to share to give a platform and kind of like readjust the podcast to do where we tell people's stories, we tell companion animal stories, so that they know that there's people out there that know about their companion animal and that their life meant something, and that it was very, you know, it was important. It's important to people. And so I put it out there like, hey, write me an email or contact me on social media and send me pictures of your companion animal that you've lost, or maybe that you haven't lost yet, and tell me about them, and I'll read it on air and we can talk about it. Because not a lot of people, like, you know, I started a podcast, you wrote a really amazing book, but there are some people that just, that's not their thing, you know, like mm-hmm. they can't find really their niche. They know they want their companion animal story out there, but they don't know really how to go about doing it. I thought that this would be like a kind of a good avenue for people that maybe don't, you know, want to write a book or don't want to start a podcast, but they can tell us about their companion animal and how great they were, because they all are great, every single one of them. And I think it's fantastic that is the most heartwarming, that your brother did that in the shelter. That makes me want to cry, because like you said, anybody that walks by or any companion animal that uses it, it's a, like a nod to her.
Yeah. It's yeah. And I will say, not to discredit my brother at all, because I'm sure it was 50% his idea, but his wife Carla and my sister-in-law used to be a grief counselor. So I'm sure she also had something to do with it, and she knows all the right things to do and say.
That's amazing. That is fantastic. Yeah. I love that. Well, I'm so happy they were able to do that for you. And I think, you know, I think that that's something that I need to look into for myself, because it's like the gift that keeps on giving. It's like their life lives on in other ways, you know, type of thing. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And then I also, just to, I don't know if people need ideas like this, but, a friend of mine named Wendy, she gave me a wind chime that has Dakota's name on it. And that's been something I told her, I am stealing this idea. So now everyone who's close to me, who's had an animal pass away, I have gotten them a wind chime with their animal's name on it. And it's just such a nice thing, 'cause it's like, every time the wind blows, you remember your loved one. And that's another little way to keep them alive or keep their memory alive.
Yep. Nikki does that. 'Cause you know, Nikki, she ran the rescue, or runs the rescue. I shouldn't say ran. Homegirl's still doing it. She's running the rescue. And anytime she has a companion animal that passes away, of any of the dogs that she's taken under the rescue umbrella, or even like guests we've had on the show that, unfortunately, we've had a couple of guests where their companion animals have passed away right after we've interviewed them, that will send them a wind chime with, you know, and she sent me one. And it was like that moment of like, like, I know what this is for, you know, like, so, but in Colorado, it's way too windy during the winter months, so I can't put it out yet because it'll break, but but that's a fantastic idea as well. 'Cause like you said, every time the wind blows, you think of them.
Yeah.
And when you hear it, you're like, oh, hi, you know, how you doing? I miss you, type of thing.
Yeah.
That's great. That's awesome. So tell me, let's talk about Dakota. They need to read the book, obviously, but I want you to talk about Dakota. And if you're okay with it, sometimes people aren't in the space. I mean, if you wrote a book, you probably are able to talk about it a little bit better, but I want to hear about Dakota. Tell me her origin story.
Yeah. So this is in the book. We adopted her. When I say we, I mean, Brad and I, my husband, we adopted her, like as soon as I was officially an adult. So the first decision I made as an adult was like, we got to get a dog. Mm-hmm. So I was a weird, I guess in the military, it's not so weird, but in the real world, it's very strange to get married as young as we were. But, I graduated from college and got married and moved from Illinois to North Carolina with my husband, where he was stationed, all in the span of 2 months or something. And so I went from being incredibly dependent on my parents to being, I joke, incredibly dependent on my husband.
Right.
And as soon as, you know, I got down there, I was like, okay, petfinder.com, let's go. We're going to find a dog to adopt. And I started out looking at pit bulls. I had worked in an animal shelter and I knew the plight of pit bulls, and I wanted to be an ambassador for them. But it turned out to be pretty difficult to get a pit bull, to adopt a pit bull in North Carolina, just because they were, there were a lot of rules in place and protections that try to keep them out of the wrong hands. So I broadened my search on Pet Finder and I started looking at just, you know, labs and shepherd mixes and all kinds of dogs. And those are the kind of dogs that I find myself drawn to, just like the everyday, you know, street dog, brown, run of the mill type of dog is like, that's where I'm at. So those are my type. And I found Dakota's picture and saved it on, you know, the big computer desktop, you know, used it to manipulate Brad into like, let's just go see her. We adopted her and the rest is history. She was, I think, I want to say 4 months was what was written on the card. Mm-hmm. That's how old she was when we adopted her. So we had her whole life and we were never adults without her. And she, I think her personality let me off the hook a little bit in terms of like, realizing she's getting old and stuff like that. Cause she was just really like independent, adventurous, always healthy, always up for anything. There were times when people would say, "Oh my gosh, how old's your puppy?" And I'd say, "Oh, she's 10. But she was still, you know, jumping up and trying to pull and being all energetic way into into her 10s and 11s and 12s. And so I just always thought of her as my best friend. Like people would say pet parent or fur baby or things like mm-hmm. that. And I was like, no. That is not our relationship. We are best friends. Right. We go on adventures together. You know, we're not like, no one's each other's caretaker. We're just mm-hmm. like buddies. And so that's what we were for a really long time. And then, you know, as dogs start aging, they start needing more care and more attention. And the relationship kind of changes. You can't yeah. just throw them in the backseat and go wherever you want to. Yeah. And so our relationship changed to accommodate that. And I found myself really surprised that I loved that too. And yeah. so I became, you know, dog caretaker lady. And that was a really fulfilling, I don't know, maybe the most fulfilling thing I've ever done is mm-hmm. Is get to take care of an elderly dog. They're just mm-hmm. like so sweet and they're calm all the time. And you, you just appreciate them all the more as they age.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of Dakota, but she was a wild one as a youngster. She was a, you know, we'd come home and my husband say, Dakota ate the remote. And I would say, "Oh my God, where is it?" And he would say, no, Dakota ate the remote. Like it's not here. Like, and she'd poop out buttons later and, you know, make us all worried. And we'd have to figure out different ways to like keep her safe from herself. And uh-huh. yeah, but she was awesome. I like to say, you know, I didn't want to write a story. A lot of the stories that I read about dogs are, you know, this dog saved this boy from drowning or this dog saved my life from addiction or whatnot. And I always felt like that's not my story. My story is that Dakota was amazing and extraordinary in that she was an ordinary dog. Like they're mm-hmm. all amazing and extraordinary. And,
right.
you know, my love for her and her love for us made her extraordinary.
Totally. Well, and there was two things that I noticed, like, the first thing you said when you were like, "Oh yeah, the military," I was like, "So we're a military family as well."
Oh, okay.
And
awesome.
I was like, I feel, and you can say if this is wrong, but I feel that as a military spouse, you have like an extra, I feel like I don't want to say more attached, but I have a different bond with my companion animals because of my spouse not really being around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the military yeah. takes a lot from obviously the service member, but also the family as well, where it's not a 9-to-5. You're not dealing with a 9-to-5 where your husband comes home, you know, at promptly 5 o'clock and you know, you have dinner ready or whatever. I mean, they can be gone for months at a time or whatever. And so I did create this bond with our companion animals because I didn't have really anybody else to I'm around my dogs more than I am anybody. There's nobody yeah. else that I am around as much as I'm around them. And so it kind of created this bond of like, they're not my animals, they're my people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're my people because I don't have. And I'm not saying anything bad about being a military spouse. I would choose it over and over and over again because I love my husband and I love the you know, the life we lead. But there's always that, like, I almost wonder if that has a lot to do with my bond with my companion animals because I didn't have that, like, real human bond with people like I have with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they come with you. I mean, ideally, they come with you all over the place. And every time you move there, I think Dakota was my maybe only constant. I mean, I was right. I was also like constantly married, you know, like that was also yeah. like a constant. But, you know, there were times when Brad didn't live with us and he, you know, he was overseas mm-hmm. or whatever. and or worked late or, you know, was out in the field or mm-hmm. all those things they have to do. And Dakota was my, you know, my number one. And I think, you know, she and Brad had a really special bond also. But if you were like, okay, who were the two that are together the most, it was me and Dakota. Yep. You know, I was like, even when he's not here, she's by my side.
Yeah. And thank God, like, honestly, the way I look at it is I don't think I would have been able to get through the military life without them. Because if I didn't have that constant and I didn't have that person to be there, I would have been much more of a wreck. Because I always looked at it in the perspective of, like, I got to take care of them. I can't be sitting here all upset he's going to be gone for 3 months or 6 months or a year or whatever. I have to be focusing on taking care of them and making sure that they're okay, because they miss him too. But also, like, they're my constant. They're my one thing that is going to be around no matter where we move, no matter where we go, no matter what is going on, they're going to be here. And so then when they're not, it's like, what the hell do I do?
Yeah. You know? What do I look at? What do I talk about? Who
totally.
Am I? Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. It's like, it's literally like an existential crisis.
Yeah.
When your soul dog passes away, it's like an existential crisis. Like, I literally was like, I don't know how to not take care of her. Because yeah. It had focused, my whole life was, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah. And you working from home too. I bet it was similar. Mm-hmm. To me, I would wake up and the first thing I would do is look over at Dakota in her dog bed next to my bed and see, okay, is she awake? Is she not awake? Does she need help getting up? Mm-hmm. Has she gone to the bathroom in the middle of the night and does that need cleaning up? And then, you know, you get up, go to the kitchen, get her pills, give her pills, take her outside, you know, like, and then during the day, my entire day was punctuated with Dakota stuff. You know, it's like, take yep. a break to go to the bathroom, let her go to the bathroom, like, take her for a walk when you're stressed, like all these things. And then, you know, especially in the first week or two after losing her, I was just like, I don't know what to do with myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I started questioning everything. I was like, the only reason I have the job that I have is so that I could work from home and take yep. care of her. And you know, I strategically selected this job because it was something doing good in the world, but not necessarily my top passion, because I was like, I need to concentrate on other things in the weekends and evenings. And that other thing is Dakota. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. I was just like, what am I doing? Who am I?
Yep. 100%. Well, and I have three other ones. So it's a lot. I think, I don't know, for me, it was a little easier in the fact that like three other beings needed me. You know, my yeah. husband kept saying, like, look at them. They need you. Yeah. You know, like, they need you. You need to get your shit together. You know, like, you need to look at the three of them. They still want you. You know, you're still their mom type of thing. But it was very much like that. Like, oh, God, what do I do? Like, and then you get that, like, and I don't know if you experienced this, and you probably, maybe you talk about it in the book, but you get that random, like, I hate using the word, but like, relief that you're like, okay, well, at least this. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, at least that. Like, at least she's not suffering. At least now I don't, well, like you said, the gabapentin, now I don't have to go get her medication every 30 days. Okay, well, at least, like, I don't know if it's like a bargaining thing my brain does, but I would get like a little bit of like, okay, well, there's a little bit of relief in here and there's a little bit of relief in here. And then I would feel guilty immediately after feeling that. Like, mm-hmm. why? Why? No, I'd rather have her here. Why am I thinking this, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That resonates big time. The feeling guilty. I would start to think, I think I caught myself ahead of even thinking that, like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't even let myself think about things that were a relief, because I would like be pre-guilty, yeah. before the thought would even come. But I think there were a couple things where I was like, okay, well, you know, that, you know, going on trips, I hadn't gone on a trip in a long time, because I mean, there was the pandemic also, but just when Dakota started getting older, I was just like, I didn't trust anyone before taking care of her. Like now I don't trust anyone, you know, like they have to be all these things. Like they can't take her for a walk if they're not going to like watch her 100% of the time and make sure she doesn't trip and, you know, like all these things. And so I just didn't go on trips, and that's what I chose. Like I wouldn't describe it as missing out on anything because I didn't want to go. Like I was like,
yep,
if I have to either go on a fun trip or stay and make sure Dakota's okay, I choose that one, you know, like I don't, no question. But, you know, once she passed away, I was like, oh, I could travel again. Which is like a little weirdly silver lining. And then I would be like, no, no silver linings.
Yes.
There are no silver linings. This is all bad.
100%. And that's weird that you brought that up because I literally was just, we're going to go to Vegas, me and my sister, next year. And I haven't been out of the state of Colorado in 10 years because of the dogs. And then specifically Kaya, because Kaya hated my husband. She hates him, like hated him. And wouldn't eat for him or probably go outside to go to the bathroom for him. And everything's very, like you said, particular. Their medication's particular. Their food is particular. You watch them a particular way. And I felt like even my husband, who I love dearly, would not have been able to take care of her to the extent that I took care of her. And there was no way I was going to leave her. There was no way I was going to leave her and make her think that A, I left her for good, or B, that she has to hang out with the person she hates the most in this world, which is my husband.
Also sad.
So, yeah, no, I mean, they had a love-hate relationship there at the end. That's kind of how I knew things were weird, is she actually kind of warmed up to him and was letting him pet her. And I was like, ooh.
Trouble's a brewing.
Yeah, this is a bad situation. I don't know what's happening, but it's really bothering me. So that's funny that you said that, because and then you don't realize that you had really tailored your entire life to your companion, your, you know, aging companion animal until they're gone, and then you're like, oh, I can kind of do things now, or I can, you know, blah blah blah, or like I don't have to wake up at 6 a.m. to make sure that they're going outside to go to the bathroom, since, you know, they can't hold their bladder very long or whatever. Yeah. And that is very interesting that you said that, because that thing that pops into my head too. But like you said, the preemptively, like, no, don't think that.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. Don't, I'd rather open that have door. Here.
Yeah. Like I would rather take care of her for 100 years and not go anywhere and, you know, buy the gabapentin and do all that stuff than have her gone. Like I would much rather just have, you know, I would do it till the day I died. So it's just one of those situations. And Dakota was really lucky that you were able, you know, to find her. It was like fate, you know, that you had saved her picture and she was the one that, you know, was, you chose each other. And, you know, she's good. I always look at like dogs that have behavioral issues, not like issues really, but we have cattle dogs. So all of our dogs are wild and crazy. And I look at the situation like, you know, maybe it was fate that I found them, or that they came to me, because I don't know if a person that wasn't as in love with them as I am would put up with some of the crap that they're doing.
Yeah, I maybe have a little bit of that sense now with Phoenix, who, by the way, I wouldn't call her a cattle dog, but that's the number one thing on her DNA test.
Oh,
she's
cool.
Like, you know, she's, I don't think she's more than 20% any specific thing, but that one is the top. But she's a little wild too. She's got a lot of terrier and it's just like wild breeds in her. But Dakota was just, she was like I was the luckiest person to get her. She was just like, she was wild, but she was food motivated and she would do anything for food, and she wanted to please everybody. And she was just like so outgoing and friendly. If there was we would joke, there was a fight at the dog, not a fight, but like two dogs barking at each other or something at the dog park, she'd run over like, what's going on, guys? Can we all just get along? Like, how can I help? And she just had like such a good personality. So sometimes my husband would say, oh, you did such a good job training her. And I was like, I mean, I did, but like, she made it real easy to do, you know?
Yeah. Well, they're like humans, you know, they some personalities are real chill. And I always feel like, you know, they always say that your first, I've never had any human children, but they always say your first human child is always like the easier one. And then the more you get is when the real, like, you know, the crazier personalities or whatever. And I feel like that's how it is with companion animals. Like the first one, they always, the first one that you just so happen to get are like really like ideal, you know? And then the ones that come after, you're like, what am I doing?
Okay, so as a second child, I'm very upset.
Sorry.
But it might be true. My brother is definitely the good one, but he was probably the easy one, especially in those teenage years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's very true, at least in my case with the two dogs. I joke that so we adopted Phoenix, I think it was 2.5 weeks after Dakota passed away. It was like lightning speed. Mm-hmm. When I look back, I'm like, do I have a disorder of some kind? Like, what was I thinking? But totally would not change it at all. It was a great decision. But we were looking for our criteria in adopting a dog was, mm-hmm. Was we wanted a big, brown, brave dog, and we got brown. She was smaller than we wanted, and she was afraid of everything. She needed a ton of training and help and, you know, support to feel comfortable in the world and everything. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't trade her for anything either.
Yep. That's how we were. We Athena was a husky cattle or a husky cattle dog. That was actually Kaya is a husky cattle dog. Athena was a husky German Shepherd mix. And definitely had the German Shepherd down. She was like the best puppy, the best, like, could take her anywhere, totally chill. And then my husband wanted to get, he wanted a German Shepherd and I wanted a husky. And that's what we were set on. We picked the names with like 8 months. It was like giving us something to look forward to, you know? So for 8 months, you know, his would be a German Shepherd and its name would be Apollo and it would have all blue stuff. And mine was Optimus Prime and he would have all green stuff. And we ended up with a full-bred cattle dog.
Oh, wow.
Nothing like what we thought we were going to get. You know, we're looking for specific. He wants a German Shepherd. I want a Husky. And we ended up just randomly falling in to a full-bred cattle dog. And then the second one, Apollo, the one that we got that was supposed to be my husband's is more mine. And the one that was supposed to be more mine is his, like, loves him. And so it's funny how things work out. But like I said, I feel like it's almost like they come to you, you know, it's like, you know, when you're ready. So what made you and your husband decide, like, what was the, like, I don't know, the one moment where you were like, we need to get another one?
I don't think I ever didn't think that.
Right.
I mean, so especially in the book, like writing the book, I was very cognizant. Like, I did not want the story to be, I took care of an older dog and she passed away, but don't worry, everything's fine. We get a new dog. Like, that's not how life felt. And it's not accurate. So I was very careful to make sure the story didn't come off that way. So in the book, you won't hear about Phoenix really. Mm-hmm. You'll get a little hint that we are considering adopting another dog, but that's not part of the story. But I was ready really soon. I was like, I never thought, you know, some people are like, I want my dog back. Like, I want to find another dog that's as close 100%. To my dog as possible. And I never thought that, because I was, again, probably because my brain wouldn't let me think that. I was, mm-hmm. I was like, no, like, she cannot be replaced. She was one of a kind. I will never love like her, you know, her again. I will never find anyone as perfect as her again. So I didn't even, you know, think that was an option. And I kind of had to like settle on, I guess, like, okay, if I get a second dog, I'm just going to love her less. Like, that's kind of what I thought. Like, I was like, you know what? It's fine, because I can't love anyone as much as I loved Dakota. And that's just the fact, but I also can't live without a dog. So I'll just get a dog and I will love her, you know, 99% or whatever of what I love Dakota. And it's so not true at all, which is another thing you have to like feel weird about. But yeah, I think I started looking at Pet Finder, just, you know, just looking. And not going to do anything. I'm just looking. And I would kind of send my husband pictures of dogs like halfway as a joke, like, ha ha ha, isn't it funny that I'm already looking, ha ha. And just kind of test the waters. And there's one day, and this little story is in the book, that there was one day I decided to broach the subject with him. And I thought for sure he was going to, you know, shut it down right away. He's very loyal, and I knew he would think getting another dog would feel like we're trying to replace Dakota. Right. And I think he would not want that at all. But I was like, I can't live like this. You know, I have to have a dog to like focus my life around. And so I just said, hey, you know, do you think we'll get another dog? And he's like, of course. Yeah. Someday. And I was like, dang it, I forgot to say soon. I forgot to put a time frame on my question. But he was, yeah, he came around to it a lot faster than I thought he would. And he was even the person who was like, maybe we get a puppy. Which I was like, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of people are like this. Once you have a senior dog, you're like, senior dogs forever.
Yes.
Like, I love them. I'm going to adopt, you know, I'm going to go to a shelter and be like, give me your oldest dog. And, yep. You know, who needs the help the most? And that's what I thought I would do. But we had been looking through pictures of Dakota throughout her life and as a puppy and just remembering how fun it was. And so my husband kind of talked me into adopting a puppy, which I'm glad we did, but I never would have expected that.
Yeah. Well, there's something to be said about having the entire process, you know, from puppy stage to when they pass on from being older. There's something to be said about that kind of bond and that relationship. And like you said, you almost get in that like mode of like, well, I'm never going to love anybody as much as I love them. So it, you know, like, yeah, I'll like the dog or I'll love the dog, but it's not going to be the same love that I had for them. And then you realize and you're like, oh no, I love the shit out of this dog too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so, it messes with your head. At least it messed with mine. I was like, wait a minute. Yep. I love this dog, you know, as much as I can love a dog. And that's how I felt about Dakota, but how's that possible?
Mm-hmm. It's weird. Cause it's like, you then realize that your brain is capable of loving any companion animal that you have in the capacity of the last companion animal that you had. Yeah. And it's crazy because you didn't think that you could do that, you know, like, especially like me at the same time, I had four and I was like, there's no way this four is it. I love them with all the love that I could ever give any like feel like there's no way. And then I'm like, maybe. Maybe there might be more love if we added another one. Not that we're gonna get another one right now, because I'm cool with having three is a good number, I think. For me, three is good. But yeah, I just think that you do go through that where you're like, well, it doesn't matter anyway, because I'm not gonna love them like I loved the first dog, or you know, I'm not gonna love them like I loved, you know, Kiki or whatever. And then you get them and you're like, oh geez, I love them so much. Why? You know?
Yeah. How is this happening? Now, so we just moved to Washington a couple months ago, and I have been thinking about like, how do I get into like the rescue community here, and how can I best help? And I would love to foster, but I keep coming back to like, either it's going to be a positive experience and then I'm going to foster fail and that'll be the end of that, or it'll be a negative experience and then that stinks. So I'm like, how do you win with fostering? And I think the answer is like, when you lose a companion animal that is like your soulmate, that's the time to foster.
Totally.
Like, 'cause you're like, you're already like, no dog's going to be good enough. It's, you know, I'm never going to love anyone. I'm not ready for another dog. Like, get some temporary ones in there and let's find them homes.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, Kiki was actually a foster fail. Because Nikki, you know, being best friends with the director of a rescue, I was friends with her. Like, the rescue was first, is how I met her, and then we became friends. And so I had that pull to be like, oh, you need help? Okay, I'll help you. And I fostered twice. The first one was Kiki. failed miserably. And Nikki knew what she was doing. She knew. Uh-huh,
they always do.
Bringing a cattle dog into a hound rescue, that I was going to fall in love with her and her name was my name. She knew what she was doing. And then the second one was actually, we saw somebody, or well, a family member of mine saw somebody throw a puppy over a fence and take off. And so we went and got the puppy and we fostered her for 4 months. But having five dogs, I will tell you, was
a lot.
Situation. And then she had Lepto on top of it. So she was peeing literally every second. Like, there was one time where she was drinking water and peeing at the same time. Because it affects like their kidneys and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I love you to death, but you need to go to another home. Like, you're great, but you need to go to another home. Like, we need to find somebody that'll, you know, another family that'll take you. And that was my moment of like, all right, we're not doing this again. I can either not handle it in the aspect of that there's too many dogs in this house, or in the aspect of I can't have another dog like in our pack to introduce or whatever. So I totally, and you're 100% right on that. I think the best time would be right after you lose your companion animal, because then you can go, all right, like, I'm going to look at this objectively and not with my whole heart, like I would, you know. But that's fantastic. And I'm a pro foster. This is not an anti-foster episode. We love fostering. We're very much for fosters. It's just, I feel like sometimes you got to have you got to be in the headspace, and you also got to be that specific personality to be able to do fostering and be successful at it, and not just adopt every freaking dog that you foster.
Exactly. Yeah. So now I'm kind of leaning toward like, okay, I can help fundraise, or I can help, you know, with transports or events or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I can handle fostering. I'd end up with a big crew.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's how I ended up with four. Because it's the same thing. You know, we got two. We were like, we're never going to get girl dog skin. We did that, all that weird stuff. I don't know if you went through this when you lost Dakota, but you do that weird, like, nothing will ever be like her. She's going to be the only. So we did like, we'll never get a girl dog again. Athena will be our only girl dog we ever had. And now we had two other girl dogs. Cause it's like, it doesn't work out that way. You know, it's one of those situations that things happen, you do things and you grow from it. And then now I'm to the point where it's like, I'm probably going to end up with like a Great Dane soon, because that's the dog I never thought I would ever have. And it's like, it just, if it so happens to happen in your life, then you end up with the complete opposite of what you thought you would have.
Yeah.
So that's so funny. No, I'm so glad that you did adopt. And I'm glad, you know, I'm really, really glad that you guys did do it 2 weeks after she passed away, because a lot of people, that's one of the main questions we get is, when am I ready? When is it able to, you know, when am I able to be able to adopt again? And so it's nice to hear another perspective. You know, some people it could be immediately, some people it's years, some people it's a couple months. And so it's nice to hear a perspective of somebody that it was only a couple weeks and it was still a healthy and good decision for you to make.
Yeah. And I think so many people ask that, and it's one of those things that just stinks because there's no one answer.
Right.
It's just like, it depends on you, and you're the only one who can know what the right answer is for yourself. But I will say we did get some people saying, I'm so sorry for your loss. You got to go get another dog. And I was like, that's not helpful. Yeah. I'm like, I don't think I need that advice. It sounds like you're saying, you know, stop being sad. Just put another dog in her place and then everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly not what I wanted to do at all. And that's not what happened. I have a friend who she lost her elderly dog about 4 months after we lost Dakota, and we were close, and mostly we were close because of our old dogs who were our soulmates. And she asked me, you know, I had adopted a puppy, and she was kind of she was basically on the same timeline as me, except 4 months later. And she asked me, did adopting a dog make you more sad about losing Dakota? And I said, yep, but still do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's anything that makes you think of them, which a new dog is going to do, it's going to be, there's going to be like contrast and, you know, like, oh, they don't know what I'm saying. And Dakota knew exactly what I wanted always. Mm-hmm. And all my nonverbals. And so you're going to be kind of not comparing, but just like noticing differences and similarities and thinking back to things you used to do. And anytime that you have those reminders in that like fresh period of grief, you're going to have some sadness, but it's also like, man, did we smile and giggle and all that, like all that joy came back into our lives when Phoenix came into our house. So mm-hmm. it's like a double-edged sword, but that's how it worked out for us.
Right. No, and I agree with that. I think everybody's timeline is different. And yeah. I think that it really all depends on where you're at. And also when it comes to grief, because everything's so tailor-made with grief, you don't really, like you, one thing will work for one person isn't going to work for you. And so mm-hmm. if you decide, you know, you always hear a lot of people say, I would always have like my husband's family would always do this where when they would have an aging dog, they would go get a puppy, like when the dog was near the end of its life so that the older dog could teach the younger dog, whatever. And then when the dog passes, they have that dog. And I was like, oh, that's kind of a neat way to look at it. But sometimes that's just not how people roll. You know, like sometimes that's just not like me. I probably needed like a couple years. I mean, it was 8 months after we did, you know, where we adopted again. But sometimes it's, you know, years, or maybe there's a fear there that they don't want to have to go through what they just went through and they don't mm-hmm. want to adopt. Or like you said, you know, maybe a couple weeks later, depending on the situation, because it is going to make you sad regardless. I think the time frame doesn't matter. I think no matter what, you're going to be sad because it's going to be a constant reminder. But also the fulfillment of having that companion animal, it helps. It really does help because it redirects, for me, it redirected my thoughts about loss into, I got to take care of this other being. I got to train them. I got to take them out to go potty all the time. I've got to, you know, do whatever they need of me. And I'm not sitting around going, like, thinking 24/7 about the loss.
Yeah. So. I definitely think, and yeah, I'm sure it's different for everyone. So I guess I'll speak from my own experience, but I was going to be sad no matter what mm-hmm. I did. So it was like any decision I could make, okay, do I adopt another dog? Do I not? Do I go take myself on a trip to, like, you know, get away from things? Like any decision, whether I did it or whether I didn't, I was going to be sad. Like that was just going to be part of the deal. So I really tried my best, and I think I did a good job of like just accepting it and just being like, okay, this is when I'm going to be sad. And that's, I'm just not going to try to avoid it. It's just here. And that's how things go. And, you know, let me write a book about it and mm-hmm. like really, yeah. really dwell in it for a while. And mm-hmm. that it worked pretty well for me. I think I had the least terrible grief experience than I thought I would, you know.
Yeah. No, and you know, we need more people out there like you that, you know, is real about their grief journey, talks about it, you know, especially when it comes to aging companion animals, because a lot of times the people that do talk about grief journeys, it's always like a very like traumatic, like all death is traumatic, but it's always like a traumatic situation that had caused the death is the reason why, you know, they're talking about it, like maybe to bring awareness or whatever. But you don't really hear a lot about people explaining their grief journey and talking about the situation when it comes to an aging companion animal. It's almost one of those things that like death isn't really talked about. It's not really breached. And so we need people out there like you that are going to communicate the whole journey and how you healthily got through it. And seeing that it's, you know, though it may be different for every person, that it's something that connects all of us. You know, if you have a companion animal and it's aging, you're gonna have to go through a lot of the things that you talk about in your book, and the thing, you know, the way you handled it. Like you said, you did very well handling it. You did very well going through the grief journey. And it's nice to hear like a perspective of somebody that handled it gracefully.
Well, thank you.
Unlike
all the denial aside, yeah.
Well, I mean, denial's, you know, denial's not the worst. Denial's not like the worst thing that you can do. I think denial creeps in that when they say there's, you know, 7 stages of grief or whatever, I think they changed it. It was 7, but they've changed it recently to be more stages. I think there's something to say with those. And I think that people pick up on different stages as their primary thing of grief, and denial is one of those. You know what I mean? Denial is one of those stages of grief. And I think that some people hook onto it. Like mine was bargaining, man. I was like, oh
you can hear that.
Bark is
sorry.
So cute. Oh God, no. We've had dog fights on the show when Nikki was on the show, like her dogs would get into it. No, it's totally fine. And I always tell people, like when they listen to the podcast, I'm like, sorry, you can hear my dog snoring, but she's hanging out with me, so it's gonna happen. But anyway, yeah. Like I think that it's nice to see somebody that's healthily dealing with it. And also, like you said, yeah, so you were in denial, but look at where you are now versus where you were when she passed away. And you know, you can look at it in a healthy way and also talk about her in a healthy way. That is a huge step, to be able to have a conversation about her and not be bawling when you bring up her name or, you know, whatever. I think that it's fantastic. And I really think that everybody needs to really check out this book. I think it'll be a really, and like you said, that the humor in it is fantastic, because not everybody is like super serious, you know, when it comes to death or it comes to talking about a loved one that's passed on. We as a society tend to angelize, if that's even a word, angelize people that have passed on, that maybe even, you know, like you don't want to tell stories that weren't, you know, real about people or companion animals that passed away, because you feel like, oh damn, like, you know, they passed away, I shouldn't really bring this up or whatever. But I still do. I'll be like, yeah, remember when Kiki pooped on my clothes? Like, you know, like stuff like that. Because yeah. It's funny and it's a part of them. It's a part of their story. And I like that you put humor into it, because grief sucks.
Yeah. If you don't like books that have the word poop in them, this is not the one for you. It's like, like chapter one is like, she poops in the house and I'm having to clean it up and wonder what the heck's going on. And
yeah,
it's full of poop and it's full of, you know, old dog stuff.
Totally. Well, which is like things you couldn't even imagine. And I when I was reading the first chapter, I was laughing so hard, because we've actually had a whole episodes based off of poop, like on the podcast, because it's just hilarious and people don't want to talk about it. And I think it's so funny, because yeah, when you have to deal with an aging dog, you pick up a lot of poop. Yes. I can't even tell you how much poop I've had to pick up. Or Kiki, because she was husky mix, I'd had to shave her butthole. Like, I know that, sorry guys, if that's a little too much, but I would have to shave because the hair would get matted.
Yeah.
And then and they're aging and I feel so bad for her. Like I couldn't like just have her with, you know, dingleberries walking around, poor uh-huh. So yeah, that's so funny.
It's really funny. Like I definitely lean toward writing how I speak. Like I like to read books that are easy to read and they flow, mm-hmm. and you don't have to kind of figure out what the person's trying to say. Anytime a book is like, and the flowering trees, I'm just like, I'm out. You know, like, I don't care what kind of trees were there. Like, tell me what you were doing and like how you felt about it. So my book is like very much conversationally written, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting thing trying to figure out like, well, how do other, you know, I'm trying to learn to be an author as I go and looking at other authors and being like, what do they call poop bags? Because I just call them poop bags.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if I need to like, is that the right thing to call them? And it's so funny. I was just, you know, just like, I'm just going to call them poop bags, because that's what we all call them. Like, it is what it is.
But it's a lot more, like, to me, I feel like because you're like, it is how you talk, that it's a lot more, relatable. Like, I was reading it and I was like, all right, like, I can get into something that's relatable. I can get into something that is more like down to earth. You know what I mean? So I think that this book is really down to earth. And I wanted to ask real quick, is that her? Is that a did is
Yeah,
that
she's on the
the
cover. Yeah, the cover of the book is an illustration of Dakota. It's based on a picture that I took of her, and she looks so smiley and happy. And I think she had just come back from the dog park, maybe in that picture. But my friend Rachel McGuire, who's a graphic artist in St. Louis, actually made that illustration for me as a present when Dakota passed away, and it came in the mail as a total shock. And I've had it framed and hanging in my house for a long time. And then when I decided to publish a book, I thought, that's the cover. It has to be the cover. It's perfect.
That's so beautiful. And what a nice like group of people you have surrounding you that really helped you like kind of get through the grief journey and buy, you know, like get you things that would just be a positive remembrance of Dakota. And you know, that is such a beautiful like literally, I just can't. It's so beautiful. I
Yeah,
keep
one thing I
staring at it.
learned writing the book and going through the story in real life is that it does take a village. I was when I first started writing the book, you know, I was learning about what it takes to write a book, and everyone was telling me how hard it is and how long it takes and how many people you have to get involved in the process if you want to have a quality book in the end. And I'll admit that in the beginning, I was kind of overconfident, and I was thinking, okay, like I'm going to do this in a year, and I'm going to do most of it, and I can design my own cover, and I can do, you know, like I can edit my own writing, and none of that is true. And so I had an amazing cover designer, Robin Ridley, and you know, several editors and friends who read it for me at different points. And yeah, I just got my butt handed to me in terms of how, you know, how much I thought I could do on my own in such
Yeah.
a short period of time.
I can't even imagine. I was just thinking that. I was like, writing a book, I feel like would be one of the hardest things to do because you're like pouring out your whole heart and everything. And then, you know, they have editors and they have all this stuff there. They'll edit, you know, like, maybe this, and this or whatever, and tell you, like, give you feedback or whatever. But when you're doing it like from a such a personal story, I would get offended. I'd be like, don't tell me what to say.
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. But yeah, that's so I self-published the book. It's under the umbrella of my company, which is called On the Nose, and the logo is also Dakota's face. And that's the publisher of the book, but it's basically me self-publishing. And I so a lot of people self-publish because they don't think they can get a, you know, traditional publishing deal or whatnot. I don't know if I could either, but I didn't even really consider that as an option because the story was so personal to me. I just thought, let's say someone tells me, like, okay, this is a really great book, but it will sell a bajillion more copies if we make Dakota a golden doodle, or, you know, like something like that, or change her name or something. I would just be like, no, I don't care. Like, this is, I want to decide every aspect of this thing. So I went the self-publishing route. And yeah, and then it was nice because I could find editors and people to help me that could work within those confines of, like, I'm not changing the story, I'm not embellishing, I'm not gonna, you know, change facts about her or anything like that. I just want to tell my story.
I agree 100%. Talk about your company. I was on the website already, and then I didn't even realize. 'Cause yeah, I noticed that the website was on the nose, and I was like, "Oh, like that's cool." Because you know how some people have like different things, but talk about your company.
Yeah, sure. So that's actually, the company wouldn't exist without Dakota, and nor would the logo. And yeah, it's called On the Nose LLC. It's on the nose comms, commms.com. And I launched it after Dakota passed away. I kind of, like I was said, I like I said, I was taking stock of, you know, why am I working this job, and what do I really want to do, and who do I want to be, and how can I be more present in all these other kinds of ways and not just, you know, when it comes to my companion animal. And I decided I wanted to launch a business. And so now I do freelance work. It's a lot of communications, writing, editing, fundraising copy, marketing copy, stuff like that. I do that for mostly nonprofits, and it's been amazing because I get to control my own time and I get to say no to the things I don't like and yes to the things I like. And I get to help incredible clients, some animal nonprofits and some human focused ones. And they're all doing amazing work and I get to be a little part of it. And then, yeah, when I decided to write a book, I thought, oh, okay, you know, this company could also be the publisher of the book. So yeah, it kind of fits in there as well. So it's kind of this umbrella company that I use to do all my communications and writing stuff.
That's really cool. That's really, really cool. Yeah, I was just taking a peek and I'm like, that's awesome. I like your website too. It's very like, I have a thing about simplicity on websites because I hate when like they're like really super ass busy. And so I really like the simplicity of it. And also you have a picture of Phoenix on there. Oh my gosh. She is adorable.
She's very cute. Yeah. And I haven't even mentioned my cat yet. I also have a cat who he went through the grieving process with us and, you know, his voice changed for a while, which I would have maybe not believed if somebody else told me that, but his meow was different for a solid week there and it sounded pitiful and he was very sad to lose his best friend. But he's still with us and now we threw a puppy at him. Like, here, handle that.
He's like, thanks, guys.
Wild, yeah, this wild, you know, very high prey drive.
Yeah.
Puppy is like all in his business now, but he's on the website too. I get asked a lot about the name on the nose because sometimes it gets used or often it gets used as a bad thing because it'll be like, that's two on the nose. But I wanted it to be something that was an ode to dogs and Dakota in particular. And it, I think it encapsulates like how I like to write. I can write in, you know, a number of ways, but what I really prefer is that conversational, like write like a human and like you're talking to other humans,
right?
You know, cut out the jargon and, and just get down to the point. And so that's what I like to do best. And, consequently what I do best.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, that's how we are. That's why we don't script anything, because we're like, I hate that. I hate when you're like listening to somebody reading like blah 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 blah.
Oh my gosh, yeah, anytime you go to a presentation and someone's reading their own PowerPoint, you're like, just give me the handout, like I what do I need you for here?
yep like I thought we were gonna listen to you like say something different, man. I don't know what's going on with that. Well, that's fantastic. And I'm really thankful that you were able to join us. And your book is beautiful. Everybody needs to go check it out. Stay, My Forever Friendship with an Aging Dog. It's just beautiful. And the cover, like literally the picture, it got me. It's so it's so pretty.
Thank you. So, I can't tell you how exciting it is to see it like on a bookstore shelf.
I can't even.
In someone's hands. It's fantastic.
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. Because you put your whole heart into it and your whole, you know, a very, like I said, grief is a very like personal thing. And so you're putting your own personal experience out there for people to read and to critique. And I don't see any reason why anybody would ever critique that, because people are interesting. So they don't need to critique it. You guys just need to buy it and you need to read it. And you need to say how great it is. And I'm really glad that you were able to put all of your thoughts and, you know, everything that you had gone through with Dakota and what it was like, you know, going through it with aging with her, so that you could not only get Dakota's story out there, but I think really help a lot of people that might be going through the similar thing.
So well, thank you. That's very meaningful. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And I'm excited that you came on the show, and we appreciate you. And we always say this to all of our guests every time. in a year from now, we want to check back in with you and have you back on the show so we can hear other projects that you may be doing, if you're writing another book, or if, you know, whatever is going on the nose, if you have anything specific going on there, we would always love to have you back on and to talk about it and to discuss all the exciting things, because we think you're going places. I say we. Here we are again, guys. Jeez. I think you're doing great things, and I think that you are, in a year from now, going to tell us some really awesome stuff. No pressure, though. No pressure.
Yeah, really. I will say I started out strong doing November is National Novel Writing Month, mm-hmm. and I started out really strong and for the first 3 days maybe, and then really just tanked. I don't know. I have an idea for a second book, but it's just not really coming to me yet, so I'm not going to force it. But maybe in a year I'll have at least gotten started on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No pressure that you have to have a full book done in a year from now. But I think that since the first one is so beneficial for people to hear, that a second one would be really cool. Especially even in like the experiences with you, with your business, that's really interesting and stuff like that. So even like, if you just write about your business and your experiences with that, and like, it's really awesome that you created a business from the ground up, that you're doing what you want to do. And then, cause that, even that's inspiring, where you're like, I wish I could do that.
Well, I will say, and sorry to burst the bubble if I do, but the only reason I can do it is because my husband is the main money maker in our family. And so I have the luxury of that being helps. Able to kind of slowly start a business and see what I like and see what I don't like, and yep. write a book and do comedy mm-hmm. and all those other fun things. And he's my sponsor. Oh yeah, comedy!
You said that you were a comedian. Like, what kind of comedian? Or like, are you just like a stand up, or like, what, talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I do stand up now. I started in improv back in, I don't even know, 2010 or something like that, and that was amazing. And then I learned about, you know, stand up comedy, and that these are things that you can do without having to be famous. There's like all kinds of local shows, and so I've just been doing that and having a lot of fun with it, and paying for gas and making very little money, but having the time of my life.
I feel like it would be so intimidating, because I'm like 50% social and funny, not to toot my own horn, but then I'm also 50% awkward. So I could feel myself.
Like, you got it. That's all you need.
I could
Have
just
you seen
feel...
these comedians? They're so, especially like male comedians, they're so awkward.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but does it work the same for the females? Is it the same where like females
so,
could get away with that and not be like super awkward? Because I tend, and this is not a sexist thing, do not take what I'm saying as being sexist, but I don't tend to gravitate toward female comedians. And I think it's because
I'm gonna send you some names.
Please do, because I think it's like a society thing, you know, where the ones that like make the money and really tour and do like have a huge following are always the male ones, you know what I mean? So I feel bad. I really want to see female comedians. I feel like I would mesh well with them, but it's just I don't gravitate, because that's not what's throwing at you.
Yeah,
constantly.
It's changing a lot, but it's still an issue. Like I won't name any names because it's really not just them, but I'm on a show. It really isn't. I'm on a show tonight where I'm the only woman. And so even though it's just a little, you know, small town show, it's, I feel a responsibility almost like, well, mm-hmm. if you don't go, it's just a bunch of dudes. So you better, you know, get showered and get your pants on, you know, like. But yeah, when you look at Netflix or HBO or anything where they're YouTube, and you just look up comedians, it's, you know, 90% plus mm-hmm. men, and you kind of have to seek out the female comedians, and it's getting a lot better, but I still think we have a ways to go.
Yeah. Okay, I've always wanted to know this, and then I won't ask you any more weird questions about being a comedian, but do you like know what you're going to say beforehand, or do you just get up and just cold read, just go for it?
I always know at least most of what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. If it's, so there are shows where you might be getting paid and an audience is paying to come and see you. Maybe those shows, I know basically 100% what I'm going to say. It's, mm-hmm. you know, I might stumble upon something that I didn't know, but that's rare. And then there are open mics where those are the time to kind of test material. So they're low stakes, you know, that's like at a bar where most people are just playing pool and they're like, oh, surprise, there's a comedy show here tonight. And so it's really low stakes and you can just kind of test out different things. So every once in a while I will have a topic in mind and just like, I kind of know what I want to say about this topic. So I'll just go up there and talk and see if anything funny comes out. Mm-hmm. But even then it's kind of sandwiched in between jokes that I know will work. So that I'm at least putting on a good show.
Yeah, because
but
that's
I will
scary.
Say, like, it's for me, it's if you told me to get up in front of a boardroom of like 10 people and talk about something professional, mm-hmm. versus like go do comedy in front of 1,000 people, I'm way more nervous about the boardroom. Like I'm way more comfortable being myself and being silly and trying to make people laugh than I am like trying to like put on a suit and like use the large words and impress people with your intelligence. Like I just like, those are the scary. So people who do that are my heroes.
Yeah, that is pretty intimidating. And I've always been the type of person where I like talking. Like obviously I have a podcast. Hey guys. I've always liked talking, but I get like, cause I have anxiety already, like just chilling, doing nothing, I'll have anxiety. And so the thought of like being in front of a bunch of people, it's like, I have this like internal struggle. It's like, I want to do it. I do want to do it. But then what if I have a panic attack? You know what I mean? Like, what if I have an IBS episode and I have the nervous poops and then I'm freaking out on stage in front of all these people and I'm not making sense because I'm thinking about how I'm having an IBS flare up. Like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I do have a joke. I say that I try to convince my mom that telling jokes is the same as having babies, because sometimes I feel like I'm going to poop myself when I deliver them. And so, you know what? You just take that awkwardness, you take that IBS, and you just make a joke about it, and then you're golden.
Yeah, at least like in society, we're a little bit more understanding about IBS now. I was telling my sister, because she's like, I'm scared to go to restaurants to eat, because if I eat and I haven't, like if I get my nervous stomach and then I have to leave, or what if I have to go to the bathroom? I said, go to the bathroom. And she's like, but how do I explain it? I'm like, you say you have IBS. Like when I was growing up, there was no such thing as IBS. And so if you were like, my stomach's upset, they were like, do you have diarrhea? You know what I mean? Like it was immediately like connected with that, and it was embarrassing. But now in society, you could just be like, I have IBS, and people are understanding. They don't really care if you're like, I got to go to the bathroom, my stomach's upset, I have IBS. Yeah,
there you go.
Well, it's awesome. I'm glad that you're on the show, and I'll check back in with you in a year. And we can hear all the projects that you're doing. And then maybe next time, because I didn't even think about this time, you should do like a little bit of like a comedy thing. Because I feel like anybody who listens to a grief podcast needs a little bit of comedy, because it's sad all the time. So next time we have you on, I'll have you do like a little bit of your comedy so that we can, if you're okay with it.
Yeah, a little comic relief.
Yeah. So... All right, guys, thanks for listening. We appreciate you. And check out her book. I'm going to say it again because I like promoting people. It's called Stay, My Forever Friendship with an Aging Dog. And Amazon, right? You can have it on Amazon. Do you want to say your website again?
Yeah, so you can go to onthenosecoms.com. And if you can go straight to /stay. Or you can go on there and click on books and find it really easily. But yeah, it's on Amazon. It's on barnesandnoble.com, bookshop.org, which is a great website that supports independent bookshops. Books a Million. And then it's if you live in the Washington, like South Sound area, it's in a few brick and mortar bookstores as well. But and you can get an ebook. All kinds of places. Yeah.
Totally. She asked me, she's like, do you want me to send you like the digital copy or physical copy? And I was like, physical, because I am a physical person and I need to physically touch a book for some reason to be able to read it. Because if I'm looking at it on a computer, I'm like, I can't do this. So
yeah, I'm the same way.
So this is awesome. I'm so glad that you were on the show. I appreciate you. We'll check back in with you. I appreciate you guys. Keep trying to send in those stories. I didn't get any. I think don't be worried. Don't be upset. It'll help in your grief journey. I definitely feel that way. So send in your stories. Send in your photos. We want to normalize what? Memorialize them. And we want everybody to hear about your amazing companion animal. So don't be afraid and send that in. And I will read your story. And I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.